You're listening to episode 33 of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or Podiobooks.com, you can stop by The Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com. There you'll find podcaster interviews, articles, The Gearheart soundtrack, and more. Or you can email me at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of The Gearheart. Last time on The Gearheart, Jonathan began to show Auden visions of the future. Cog, Augustus, and Maeve made landfall in the city of Keldenorn, only to find it under a strange spell. With Kaldavi warships closing and time running out, can they find the truth? Find out on The Gearheart. Fuzzy seeds drifted through the air of the torn sections of Antonello Manor as Astrid strode through its empty hallways. The bursting vegetation had already begun to succumb to the natural cold of Kaldavia, its decaying orange and brown leaves spinning down to the ground from where branches pierced the structure. Astrid took special precautions to shield the convergence generator from any of the resurrected animal and plant life. The ballroom chamber remained totally intact, along with its living occupants. She enjoyed seeing a successful test of both of her devices at once. Slight rustles infested the manor in the 2 days since they fired the generator, and Astrid took to carrying her elemental rifle with her. Everywhere she walked, something always moved in the corner of her eye. Her heart felt no fear at their approach, but she still readied her rifle. While she longed to examine the creatures of which Nicholas spoke, she could not allow them to compromise the generator. If only she could convince them to stay away and let humanity die peacefully and alone. As afternoon wore into sunset, Astrid saw more shadows approaching, always careful to remain out of sight. A crowd of creatures began to gather at the periphery, and she knew that only meant one thing. Pretending not to notice, she slowly made her way back toward her quarters to don her armor. Soon she would have the privilege of seeing the creatures. Astrid thrilled to know she belonged to only a handful of people who would lay eyes upon their successors before the human race was extinguished. She did not reach her other gear before gurgling noises filled the hall behind her, halting in guttural at first, but increasing in clarity. The creatures spoke to each other from hidden vantage points in the floors and ceilings, behind every wall and door, and on the other side of every window. Very soon now they would make themselves known. Astrid flicked a switch on her rifle, and it hummed to life, filling the gloomy hallways with a watery glow. A tremendous thud on the floor behind her caught Astrid's attention. One of the successors had leapt down from the ceiling and climbed to its feet. Its body was a pink, fleshy mass of muscles, dotted with prickly hairs and brown blotches. Its wicked talons clacked against the ground as it padded closer, inspecting the woman with its bulbous eyes. Black, viscous saliva ran from its drooping mouth, and Astrid felt certain its maw concealed sharp teeth. It bore no outward signs of magic, but a beastly pack intelligence. It stared at her, curious. She stared back. It stood on its hind legs and raised a clawed hand. Astrid raised her own. Its legs rippled with might as it rocked back and forth, its arms swaying gently from side to side. The beast shook its head, and black flecks of spittle launched out into the hallway. So, these were humanity's replacements. They looked hungry. Astrid wondered if this first attempt at contact was not a ruse to distract her from an ambush. She could not die this day. She would soon, very soon. A creak on the floor behind her gave away her approaching attackers, and Astrid loosed a beam of elemental energy into the first creature's face, leaving only a smoking hole where its mouth had been. She turned and spewed a lance of light from her weapon, searing across the other two creatures' torsos. Their bodies had not even hit the ground before she reached for a grenade from her belt. Reflexively, she dipped into the housing of the device with her magic and primed the arcane charge. Then Astrid dropped the grenade and ran. The gurgles became a thundering series of roaring cries, and Astrid's heart raced with joy to engage the new creatures. Nicholas's apprentice did not turn to look as she ran. She simply sprinted as fast as her legs would carry her until she heard it. The sudden bloom of silence, followed by a rushing pop. When the air sucked back toward her, back toward the grenade, Astrid skidded to a halt and turned to admire her handiwork. The device had carved a perfect spherical void out of the manor, its walls and floors glowing where the sphere of nothing touched. No concussion rippled from the illuminated absence, only a faint breeze wafting toward the air that should have been there. Several of the creatures, caught halfway in the blast, writhed and bled on the floor, their limbs, torsos, and heads severed by the device. Astrid blasted away at them with her rifle, each new shot destroying another creature. The entire wing of the manor began to creak and whine. The load-bearing structures weakened or missing altogether, and the floor collapsed into a slippery wooden ramp. Astrid lost her footing, but managed to catch hold on a decorative piece of molding. She continued to fire down at the things with her free arm. Dozens of the creatures clambered into the open hole, blatantly ignoring their fallen brothers. Astrid's sizzling shots pierced beast after beast, striking them down with pinpoint accuracy. And still they kept coming, despite the sweeping arcs of glowing destruction, culling their numbers. Then suddenly, one of them howled, and the assault stopped entirely. The creatures grabbed what they could of their fallen comrades, and they poured out through a hole in the house. Astrid pulled herself to her feet, surveying the damage to the southern wing in wonder. Without her rifle and grenades, just one of those beasts would have torn her to pieces. She could see why Nicholas liked them so much. The soft patter of rain upon the roof told Astrid the slushy winter storms would be starting up again. She retreated into the darkness of the manor to check the systems and prepare things for the final battle. The rain shot through Augustus's wool pea coat like frozen bullets. At first, the protection worked admirably, but its warmth withered under the persistence of the storm. Augustus shivered uncontrollably, and Maeve appeared to be doing no better. To make matters worse, the new plant life choked the drainage systems and culverts, and they soon slogged through ankle-deep, frigid water.
"Cog!"
called Augustus. She turned to see him. She did not shiver, and her short, red hair hung down over her eyes like a mop. Her pink irises pierced through the gray light of the storm. Something in the way she regarded him told Augustus it would not be wise to surprise her right now. Cog had none of their weaknesses, and Augustus found himself in awe of her body. Awestruck or not, if they continued without drying off, Augustus and Maeve would die of hypothermia.
"We need to find some shelter until morning,"
he shouted over the pounding of the rain. Cog looked at him, then surveyed her surroundings. The group had trekked into the heart of the financial district, and taller, sturdy granite and marble buildings surrounded them on all sides. Augustus looked too, and he spied a light inside one of the rooms of a nearby bank. The warrior woman's head snapped in that direction the moment Augustus took notice. She sloshed over to where the mechanic stood clutching Maeve.
What do you suppose that could be?
Asked Cog. Augustus couldn't be sure. It might be a trap. It definitely wasn't electricity. A raging inferno had destroyed the coal power plant on the edge of town, along with most of the factories. The soft orange glow and subtle flicker told the young mechanic it was likely fire.
Better to ask who than what,
said Maeve, her tiny voice trembling under the strain of the cold. They had seen a lot of skeletons on their trek into the city. Sad, desiccated things with bones as brittle as dry twigs. When they'd approached the newly awakened forest, Augustus took notice that the border of the lush jungle was a perfect circle, a ring around the city similar to a blast radius. Doubtless, Nicholas had set off a weapon that killed everything in the city, leaving only these accursed plants. It took Augustus and Maeve several hours to come to terms with what they saw, but Cog's resolve had redoubled.
Whoever that is, they're unlikely to be on our side. What if it's Nicholas? Asked Augustus.
What if it's Astrid or Darren?
Asked Maeve with a shudder.
Maybe it's Wallaby, Buskerton, and Crust,
said Cog, and she marched off in the direction of the building.
It would be providence if we can meet them early.
Augustus splashed after her, with Maeve shortly in tow. He drew a handgun, but he wasn't even sure if it would work, as waterlogged as it was. The mechanic reached into it with his magic, sensed the machine would not operate, and he cursed his luck. His only other weapon was a diving knife, and he scarcely felt that item would meet the challenges ahead. Before Maeve could ask what was wrong, Augustus stifled his expression and caught up to Cog. Maeve accompanied them because Jonathan foretold her importance. Cog traveled with the group in a leadership capacity, and because her fighting abilities surpassed virtually any seeker. Augustus came along so that he could disable Nicholas once Cog had subdued him, and because Astrid's machinations may have been beyond the knowledge of Maeve and Cog. However, he felt useless, and he lacked his armament from the chapter house in Fumiston. If only the Avengers still existed, Augustus could patrol the skies. The trek across the flooded boulevard terrified the mechanic. He hated being out in the open after seeing the strange bird creatures from the safety of the boat. Any minute, the young man expected one of the shadowy things to swoop down and tear into him. He kept his eyes skyward and waited, he and Maeve crouching low as they chased after Cog. The front of the Caldavi National Bank loomed over them in the storm, lightning flashing across its face. Its facade bore a stern character, a massive marble edifice inset with statuary depicting lions and eagles set on colossal white columns. Cog dashed, not for the stairs to the front door, but to the alleyway around the side where there were virtually no windows. Augustus and Maeve finally caught up, breathless and shivering in the frozen rain.
Cog, whatever's in there, we've got to clear it out, said Augustus. I don't think Maeve's doing too well.
I'm fine, Augustus,
Maeve stuttered, barely able to form the words through pale lips.
Yeah, well, I'm not doing so well.
I understand,
said Cog.
I'm going in from the roof. Less likely to be trapped that way.
Without waiting for an answer, Cog leapt from the ground with a jet of water in her wake. Her first footfall landed upon a windowsill, then she bounded up to the opposing building. She continued in this fashion until she reached the roof above. Augustus looked at Maeve, the girl's normally shining eyes ringed with bruised circles, and the mechanic smiled. She smiled back weakly, and he pulled her in tight. There was little warmth left between the two of them, but their pressing bodies searched nonetheless. He could not smell her skin or hair. The frigid wetness drowned all sense. Augustus wrapped his arms around the small of her back and squeezed reassuringly. Maeve seemed so weak, and Augustus felt no better. He hoped Cog would hurry. Mm-hmm. cog crashed through the skylight, landing on the stone floor with a violent thud. The glass glittered and sparkled as her sword appeared in her hand with a brilliant shower of light. Cog traced a white sigil, and the blade shimmered, casting tiny flares away from it like peeling paint. Her glass eyes scoured the room, ready to hack any trouble to pieces. Her grip tightened on the thick iron, and she grit her teeth. This building contained no skeletons, but it had seen its share of violence. Fresh corpses lined the hallway, victims of small arms fire. Their remains parodied their surroundings, richly dressed dead bodies in a richly appointed environment. Whatever happened in the bank, Cog knew Nicholas hadn't killed these people. Some other force had been at work here. That's when she rounded the corner and saw them, the familiar forms of humans that were the hallmark of Nicholas's weapon. Dusty skeletons in soldier uniforms stood over cowering, morbid husks of men in suits. It became clear that the hangman's detonation had interrupted an execution and a robbery. The men in uniform still had all of their gear, guns, packs, bedrolls, fresh clothes, chemical heat packs, food, and other sundries. The soldiers bore no marks of the state, and Cog tried to imagine who they might be. Rebels? No matter. The provisions and shelter to be gained from the bank were substantial, and its circuitous hallways and stone walls made it a good choice for fortifications. Weathering the night here depended entirely on what she found next. Cog still had to track down the source of the light. She wandered from room to room, sword always at the ready, its blade casting a steady, dim light. Most of the rooms held a cacophony of scattered papers and displaced furniture. Whenever Cog found a locked door, she listened briefly, then kicked it off its hinges, rushing inside in the hopes of surprising any occupants. Only empty rooms or corpses greeted her. Then she finally saw it, a sliver of light at the far end of a long hallway. The room certainly gave her an ominous feeling. There could be any number of traps or attackers hidden in the rooms between her and her target. Jonathan had once told her about an infernal device called a landmine, and given his description of the thing, this hallway seemed a very good place to deploy the item. Cog wanted to run down the hallway and rush the door, but even in her time, men would have at least placed spears on the other side. She wished Augustus had some power that would let him fly up and look in the other side of the window. Cog carefully searched each room as she approached the end of the hall, and finally reached the door with the orange crack running down the side. Whoever lit the light inside the room wanted to be found, or at least, he or she wanted the exterior room to be found. Wallaby, Buskerton, and Crust would have come to her directly, and Auden Slade was more likely to attack her outright. It had to be a trap. However, Augustus and Maeve desperately needed shelter, and if they were being hunted in that moment, Cog needed to flush out the hunters. Cog ducked low and softly placed her foot upon the door near its hinges, testing the angle of her strike. The red-haired fighter lashed out against the wood as hard as she could as she launched herself away with her free leg and rolled into a somersault. The door gave way with a cracking complaint, tumbling into the room and bouncing off a table before sliding to the floor. Yellow, incandescent light spilled into the hallway, blinding Cog with its contrast. The contents of the room came into focus slower than Cog would have liked as she sprung to her feet, blade at the ready. Inside, Cog spied the familiar brass, copper, and steel of many of Augustus's instruments, as well as a small chest marked provisions. The warrior recognized everything as current weapon systems, as well as some that the young mechanic had not yet finished. She shook away the shock and crept inside, peering around the corner for traps. Finding none, she continued forward. She could scarcely believe her eyes as she swept over the room. Nearly all of Augustus's critical weapons work had been transported from the Seeker House at Fumiston, and Cog spotted a case of the elemental spheres that Augustus had used down in the tunnels in Cerceval. Just as she began to fit the pieces together, Cog glanced down at the center of the table and found a folded parchment note. The outside read, "My love." Cog didn't need to guess who left it. She opened the note. "My dearest, I have imagined this moment for hundreds of years and wondered what to say to you. How do you speak to one to whom you owe a debt that cannot even be repaid in blood? For a long time I thought I knew. I believed I had the words to convey to you the depths of my sorrow, my grief, and my adoration for you. When I first saw you again, those words failed me. The phrases upon which I had built the whole of my ego turned to mud, and I sank. For a long time before I made my choices, I felt so empty when I said, 'I love you.' I felt empty because the simple hackneyed phrase did not reflect how special you were, how beautiful or how perfect. How could I connect those syllables together in the same way as any peasant farmer to a whore? And now, I feel the same way about the words, 'I am sorry.' Our language contains no letters potent enough to speak of my regret to you. And I will not dishonor you with an explanation of my foolish actions. I do not deserve to explain myself. I deserve your hatred, and I trust that I now have it. All that I can do is give you my solemn promise that I will undo what has been done to you. All these years of travails, all these years of sadness, all was in service to my bright lady, the one who slept under the castle of her father's enemy. When you awoke, I did not have the heart to put you back to sleep, but I wanted to. I wanted to keep you safe, dreaming away inside the Gearheart of sun-dappled wheat fields and the earthy smell of the old oak tree behind the manor. When you awoke, I wanted you to awaken a woman with the warm skin of my hand upon your face and my lips upon yours. I wanted it so I could tell you it was a dream, that you should forget all of the pain with which I burdened you. I wanted to give you back everything, and I yet shall. Let these weapons aid you. I will be watching over you, my shining ruby. And though they are weak, these words will have to do for now. I love you. I am sorry. Wyvern the Younger." Cog had no time. The hours to sort through her feelings simply did not exist. She almost folded the note into the pocket of her sopping wet pants, but she hesitated. She didn't want the ink to run. She also didn't want Augustus or Maeve to see it. She felt mortified at the thought that her two companions might have been present at the moment she found the missive. Cog gingerly took the paper and folded it neatly in the ways taught to her by her mother until it became a tiny, flat parcel. She then tucked it into a crevice in the wall of the room, making certain to remember its location. She would come back for it before they left, assuming any of them left. When they did, she would read it again and make up her mind then. Cog doused the light and made her way downstairs. Licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org. The beautiful beautiful vocals found in this episode of The Gearheart are courtesy of Starla Hutchton. You can find her podcast novel at thedreamersthreadnovel.com.